I'm back with author Clint Adams, and a very riveting topic, not the most pleasant topic one can discuss, but I guess has been said in many ways, and in some sense is taught by various religions, the truth will set you free. So we are talking about Clint's books, The Culvert, Boarding School, and Dollar Lake, which take up the subject of child abuse, predatorial behavior, and human trafficking, a topic that, as we've been learning in our conversation with author Clint Adams, has legs. One of the things that strikes me about the books, as I touched on earlier, is that they are very graphic, very detailed. The type of material that is not really suitable, I suppose, for an 8 or 10-year-old. What do you think is your age group demographic, by the way? Are these books that should be read by teenagers? Are these books that really should not be read by anyone under the age of 21? Because you don't classify them as pornography, and yet you've been accused once or twice by people who don't really understand where you're coming from is, well, this is dirty, it's smut, it's porn. How do you react to that?
Well,
why so graphic?
Pardon me?
Why so graphical?
Okay, well, I'm graphic because I want there to be no question in the reader's mind about what it is that the victim is going through or the protagonist is going through. Because in just about every other aspect or location in our society, we gloss over it. We use euphemisms, or we just lead the reader to the point and then let the reader imagine. And that's fine for most other forms of literature. But I think, considering the mission that I felt I had in writing these books, I didn't think that there was any place for that. It's interesting. There was one reviewer on Amazon of my book, Boarding School, who was rather critical of the fact that I didn't do that. I didn't use more inference, and I didn't suggest and let the reader come to his own conclusion. And I recognize that that's considered a high form of writing, but in this case, because of this particular subject matter, I felt it was critical. And that's because of, you know, look at society's reaction. It's, oh my gosh, that's terrible. What are we going to do for dinner tonight?
Yeah, exactly.
It's so ignored. I mentioned the sex parties that I talk about in the book Dollar Lake that were held in a penthouse by a number of our city's leading business and civic leaders. The reality is just about everybody who knew these people knew that something was going on over all these years. And yet nobody in my city did anything about it. I can remember driving past it, the penthouse or the tower one day, the building one day, with my uncle. And I said, and this was right after the whole thing had blown up and the Franklin Federal Credit Union and everything was in the papers. And I said to my uncle, yeah, there is a building where all those sex parties took place. And my uncle said, yeah, everybody knew that he had a little hidey-ho up there. And yet for 30 years,
it went on.
It went on. People knew things were going on. They probably didn't know to the extent, or maybe they weren't aware that it was boys being scooped up off the streets or taken out of Boys Town or other orphanages. You know, it was going on, and everybody just sort of looked the other way.
So Boys Town was complicit in this, too?
Oh, yeah. Boys Town was mentioned as well. And if you go into this, look at that video by the BBC, Conspiracy of Silence, they talk about Boys Town, kids being used or borrowed from Boys Town, and they even make an attempt to call over to Boys Town and for some comments, and they refuse to cooperate. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Big time.
Yeah. That's severe. We talked, you and I, during the break real quickly. You've had comments not only from people who say that your books have changed their lives, and I've heard many of those comments as well, but you talked about how people say that they felt reading your books like they were there, especially boarding school. Now, I will say, having read all three books, I felt that same thing with all of them. Let me start with talking to you for a few minutes about The Culvert. Now, these are boys that are, what, 12, 13, 14 years old?
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
And I have the sense that anybody, and many of us have, anybody who's endured any kind of bullying, even if it was not sexual in nature, could really relate to a lot of what happens in The Culvert. Talk about the book The Culvert for a moment.
Well, The Culvert is a story of innocence that is destroyed by an older kid. The main character is a boy named Will McDonald. He's 13. Nice kid, does well in school. He's the kind of boy next door that everybody
likes. He's an athlete, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a swimmer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He swims and gets good grades, class president, teachers like him, all that kind of stuff. And there's an older boy who's been let back a number of times, and he's just not fitting into society and not doing well in school and really, you know, is marching towards a life of imprisonment in terms of how he conducts himself and his attitude and all that sort of thing. So eventually he attacks Will, and Will becomes sexually abused, and later in the book...
Will is the central character in The Culvert.
That's right. That's right. And so the story deals with what it's like to go through something like that. You know, you're just walking home from school one day, minding your own business, and suddenly you're grabbed and tied up and stripped what's I find something just happened to me recently. I wrote that book. That book came out in 2005. I just had a conversation, a series of emails with a reader last month, who himself told me that this book just freaked him out because when he had been 14, three other kids in his class had lured. He was always skinny and weak, and other kids made fun of him, and he was lured into the backyard of a vacant house, tied up to a tree with a hose, beaten with the ends of the hose and with a fist of the kids. They stripped him, and then they sexually assaulted him. And then after they were done, they beat him up some more and left him passed out in the grass. And this, the man is now a grandfather, but telling me his story, it's very clear to me that this was a seminal event in his life and one that he's never fully gotten over. And I think that reading my books has helped him to come to terms with it. At least that's the impression I got from the things that he was saying to me. That what I said earlier, it is possible to put the past in the past and move on, and say, okay, it happened. Nothing I could do about it. Nothing I'll be able to do about it in the future. But I have a life to live and goals that I want to reach.
And it's not so much. I don't get the impression from your writing that you're saying, get over it. You're saying, do what you have to do to get beyond it and move on. It's not so much,
sure.
Don't process it. Don't seek help if that's what you need, et cetera, et cetera. You're saying that this is a serious, and in fact, at the end of Dollar Lake, you kind of take that up. But before we jump ahead to Dollar Lake and boarding school, one thing that impressed me as I reflected on the culvert, was at the end we are introduced to the police. They finally get involved and arrests are made. It seems, the reader gets the impression, that the police were compassionate and professional. And yet, I think back to the 70s, the 60s, was law enforcement really equipped to deal with this? Were the police as responsive as they should have been? And have you had any feedback from law enforcement people about either or all of the books?
No, none. You might also be aware that in boarding school, I'm kind of critical of the police because it seems that a lot of times things like this go on where everybody else seems to know about it but the police. Mm-hmm. And things go on and they don't ever show up to put a stop to it. I don't know. In this case, since the culvert took place in a small city, Hastings, Nebraska, it was reasonable in my mind to believe that and also since the sheriff is Will's father.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that. Key point. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
I felt that compassion being demonstrated by Will's father and a couple of deputies that work for him wasn't so outlandish to add to the story.
And there were a number of very suspenseful things that went on involving the police, not only in the culvert, but in Dollar Lake. And I want our audience to understand these really are a must-read book as drama, almost as much as the subject matter that they take up, because I don't think anything could be as important as the subject matter you're dealing with. And I commend you for taking this on, and you must have done a lot of research in preparing to write these books. Let's move on to boarding school. Talk to me about boarding school. Now, am I given to understand you attended a boarding school, an English-style boarding school?
I attended several. this particular one was the first that I attended, and it was located not too far from where you are.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I know the area, and a lot that I wrote about in this book is true. A lot of the things in boarding school really did happen.
Can I have you tell us what school?
Well, in the book, I call it Ulster Academy, and there are a few clues, it's off of Highway 193, and it's near the town of Ulster, Massachusetts, and there's a huge lake, and anybody familiar with that with the area that I'm, near Worcester, I've probably given away enough clues now as it is.
Does the school still exist?
No. As I mentioned at the end of the book, it burns down, and the only difference is it burned down about 3 years after I left. Whereas in the book, just for the sake of expediency, I talk about it burning down, the summer after I left.
Mm-hmm.
But so
the stories were true. Those things really happened. Did they happen to you?
I want to tell you that I don't know that I want to get into what is and isn't truth and what is and isn't fiction. I would just simply say that there's a lot in the story Boarding School that is true. I'll give you an example. There's a story in there about kid down the hall from me who invited a golden retriever into his room one afternoon, and I talk about how I discovered the two of them in bed together later that afternoon and how shocked I was because I'd never, at that age, ever heard of any such thing. And that was 100% true. One of the people that I've been corresponding with who's read this book is a fellow who wound up being a teacher at this school a couple years after I had left. And the although in the book I say that this kid was down the hall was a senior, he actually was younger that year. And so he was still there when this teacher, who many years later read my book, was teaching at the academy. And I did tell him the true name of this person, and he said, he couldn't believe it. He said, oh, my gosh, him, really? I can't believe it. And then he said, of course, that does explain why I always saw him hanging around with a black Labrador retriever. So,
but
anyway.
Yet, as disturbing as that behavior might be, that does not represent sexual abuse, does it, or predatorial behavior?
No, it doesn't. But you know, that was just one example of that. That's such an outlandish thing to believe that could happen, and it really did.
And it does happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. That's just one example. But you know, the basic story is that there was systematic. There's a group of students there. Who run the school, basically, and they select, you know, a few first-year students every year to indoctrinate, to initiate into their little world, their little group, and it's a sexual initiation.
But as I recall, it wasn't just students.
Hmm.
It wasn't just students.
No, there were some. Some of the teachers were involved too. As I said at the end of the first, the end of the first chapter, when my folks dropped me off there, they had no idea they were leaving me at a school that had the worst case of English boarding school disease ever seen in this country. That's
wow.
What they call it, English boarding school disease.
How prevalent is it? Does this happen at all boarding schools, most, some, a few? How bad is it?
Oh, from my own experience is about all I can go by, and I would say that what I wrote about and what I went through at this particular academy is way to one end of the scale in terms of, you know, amount of activity in this area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are cases where teachers have take advantage of kids. There are examples where older kids force younger kids into having sex. You know, I go back again to those two cases we talked about in New Hampshire and Rhode Island recently. So, you know, this stuff does go on to one extent or another, but it isn't something that you automatically find in every single boarding school, I don't think.
Author Clint Adams is my guest. ClintAdams.net will take you to his website, and you can get a synopsis of the three books that we're talking about that he has written, The Culvert and Boarding School, and in a moment we'll talk about Dollar Lake. Just incredible. I think the books are all well written. Culvert was the first one you wrote. Now, boarding school, these are all different characters. They're not the same as in the Culvert. And then in Dollar Lake, you go back to the characters that were in the Culvert, which is fascinating. We kind of pick up and see what happened to them. But how are all three books connected?
Well, you know, I'm sure you've heard people, artists say, like songwriters or authors will say, you know, when I'm writing, it's like I'm being guided spiritually. I just sort of open myself up and put down whatever comes to my mind, and it's like someone else is guiding me. That honestly is the answer for how I came up with the storylines for these three books. and it was just one day suddenly they were all there in my mind, and so in terms of timing, I don't know. I guess you know, Culvert and Dollar Lake are sequels. I mean, Dollar Lake is a sequel to the Culvert. But Boarding School was crying to come out also, and once I had written the Culvert, I really felt highly compelled to write Boarding School next, and so that's what.
Well,
I
they
did.
Do they do follow an age progression, because in Culvert you're dealing with the younger kids, shall we say, and then you're more the high school age in Boarding School, and then in Dollar Lake we're talking here about 18, 19, 20 year olds. Is that about right?
Well, kind of. Actually, Will McDonald in the Culvert is 13. In Dollar Lake, it's a year later, he's 14.
Oh, okay. So it's a little sooner.
Yeah, Will, and he has a bunch of friends, three friends with him, three or four, actually. And they are essentially the same age as he is in both books. The bigger kids, the one, it's just the one in the Culvert, Jake, and Jake is, I think, 15 or 16 in the Culvert, so Dollar Lake is a year later, so he would be 16 or 17. And the other three guys that he meets up with in the Nebraska State Penitentiary are up to the age of 18.
This is, as I said a moment ago, well-written drama. Let's talk specifically about Dollar Lake, which, you know, one thing I noticed with your books is it's either you read a chapter and put it down because you need time to digest it, or you just can't put it down and you have to read on and on. And I, again, that's I think a compliment to your style and the way that you handle the subject matter. I certainly found Dollar Lake, I think I read it in two sittings because I had to. It's not something you could get away with or just kind of dismiss when the phone rings or when it's dinner time. As I recall, I went hungry that evening, but if there's one of the three books that deserves a movie deal, and they all do, but I think Dollar Lake is just phenomenal.
Thank you.
Was it harder to write? Was Dollar Lake more difficult to write?
It just took a lot longer because I was doing a lot more research related to the sex parties that went on here in town. And so I brought in a lot of characters. And I, you know, on the one hand, you want to say the chief of police was involved. And on the other hand, you can't say it. So you have to write it in such a way that you get the idea across without actually making an accusation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, Dollar Lake took me 13 years to write.
Yeah.
And, but I get that comment from just about, from an awful lot of readers, a lot of people. I am responsible for a lot of people going without food and without sleep.
Well, the one thing that, as I think about Dollar Lake, it's just incredible. It takes us so many places. We go from Dollar Lake itself is basically a mud puddle in the summertime, something I'm sure is rather typical in the Midwest. Whereas
Thank
in
you.
The winter or spring, I'm not crediting you with that.
Okay.
I think somebody else has control over that. But, you know, where you would have a pond in the spring, and it's basically a mud puddle in the summertime,
right.
We're inside that house where these boys are being held captive. We travel to a rather nice upscale penthouse apartment or whatever in the city. We're hearing about the news media and what they do. It takes us to, or almost to, a military base. I mean, the book is all over the place, and yet it's all real and connected. It's not fanciful or disjointed. And I think, in a sense, that sort of depicts how widespread this problem is, that it it has legs in almost all aspects of society. I mean, you talk about Boys Town, for crying out loud, and that's run or was run by the Roman Catholic Church, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, still is. And, yeah. And yeah, absolutely. And but here's the thing. There is a Catholic priest in Dollar Lake for one scene, and that's just so discussion can be held as to kids that need to be pulled out for a night of revelry at the kids' expense, and that's, you know, sets up what's going on in the book. But there's been so much talked about and written about the Catholic Church of late, I felt there wasn't any need for me to pile on.
Right, and, right.
And it's not just within the Catholic Church where this stuff goes on anyway. And so I made a point when I wrote these books to, you know, not include the easy sort of things to go to, the easy themes like Catholic priests and that sort of thing.
Yeah. What other kind of feedback have you had on the books?
A lot of people do tell me that they can't put it down. When they get it, they got to read it from beginning to end. And that's with all three of them. A lot of people... On the other hand, I have a friend here in town who read Dollar Lake, and he had a kind of a sheltered growing up. He's CEO of a major company here, but growing up he had a pretty sheltered life, and he found Dollar Lake to be a little on the disturbing side. He called it very intense, and it became so intense for him that he had to put it down periodically in his attempts to get all the way through it.
Mm-hmm.
But most people devour the books. A lot of people tell me that when they're reading, especially in boarding school, when they're reading it, they feel from my descriptions that they're right there having these things happen to them as well, and that they become frustrated in that they want to be able to save the day. They want to be able to say, you know, I'm calling the police or or whatever, you know, solution comes to their mind and at a given point. And readers have told me time and time again they become completely wrapped up. A lot of people have told me that it's been 2 weeks since I read your book and I still can't get it out of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I certainly can vouch for that. I think it took me several weeks. Just wonderful work that you have done, Clint. How has writing these books affected you and your life? Now, I'm going to be fair. I'm going to tell you that that's a question I ask every author too, because I think it's important. When you do a work that means something, it has to have a bearing, a ripple effect on your life and maybe that of your family.
My wife is very frustrated with me because she wants me to write romance novels. She thinks that if I write romance novels, I'll sell millions of them and then we'll get lots of money. And she says, she told me once that my problem was that I was trying too hard to be another Hemingway. And I admire Hemingway and have tried to learn from him in my writing, but she's essentially right. I'm not trying to be another Hemingway, but I am trying to write the best possible books that I can write. And so I take all the extra time necessary to do the job as well as I can possibly do it. So in answer to your question, I've known at least as far back as the fifth grade that I wanted to be a successful author. And I define the word success as somebody who writes something that is compelling, that readers want to read or enjoy reading or want to read again. You know, I don't measure it necessarily by royalties. And I know that since the fifth grade because I decided instead of turning in my English grammar text in the fifth grade, I felt I needed to keep it as a reference. And indeed, that's precisely what I did. I have it here on my bookshelf.
Oh, really? Yeah. Your fifth grade. Wow, excellent.
Grammar book, because, you know, it conjugates verbs, all the different, you know, I mean, it has
basics
in there.
Yeah, there's so much we learned in school that we forget.
Yeah, when do you use a semicolon, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I have always wanted to be a writer, and I didn't really think that I was going to write books on this particular topic, and in fact, I'm a little, I wish I had come up with something else at times. On the other hand, based on the responses I've gotten from people who themselves were victims of child sexual abuse, I think I've made the right decision. I think ultimately I've done the right thing. I think because these books tell the story and tell it in a compelling and honest way, and show those who have gone through the experience that it is possible to live through this and go on afterwards with your life.
Any movie deals in the offing? Any interest on the part of Hollywood?
You know, I really would love to see one or more of these turned into a feature. I mean, I suppose that makes me like every other author out there. I do feel that any one of these could be incredibly compelling. It requires a little bit of courage, I suppose, on the part of a filmmaker. And since we're seeing nothing coming out of Hollywood these days but sequels or books based on, or movies based on comic books or whatever, I don't think there's a great deal of courage going around these days.
Yeah. What about overseas? Maybe an overseas filmmaker or the BBC or something.
It's a possibility, you know. Well, I mean, I'm here. The books are there. They're available. They're online, you know. From my website, I can be emailed directly. So all it takes is somebody thinking, hey, this might be a deal to do.
ClintAdams.net. And the books are The Culvert, Boarding School, and Dollar Lake. What are you working on now? Any future books, novels coming out?
Yes, I have a couple more coming out. It's going to be a while, though, because I'm a small business owner, and my business has become quite busy over the past year, and I have to...
Good.
You know, there are such things as mortgages and light bills.
Yeah, so I gather.
Yeah, they have to be dealt with. And to that end, you know, if we were talking about a lucrative movie deal, then I could give my attention more to this career than the other one, but that's another matter.
Well, what are you thinking about writing about?
No, I do have a couple more books going at the moment.
Good.
When I mentioned before this teacher who had wound up teaching at the academy a couple of years after I had left it. That's the center of the book Boarding School. And we had really long, 6 months worth of an email exchanges. In fact, I even took all of his emails that he sent me on Boarding School, and I put them into a notebook because I felt that, you know, it was just the type of conversation and discussion I wanted, like you'd have in high school English class where you study, you know, you look into a book and you look at the symbolism and the motivation behind the characters and all that kind of stuff. And we had very substantive discussions on all three books. And at the end of all that, he said, you know, I now feel like I know all these characters and like they're friends of mine, and I really wish there was more I could read about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, yeah, you know, I kind of feel the same way. I feel I know these characters really well, like they're friends of mine as well. So one book is picking up from Boarding School. Is that right?
Or Dollar Lake.
One book picks up, well, and one picks up from Dollar Lake.
Okay.
So I've begun both of them, and the one from picks up from Boarding School takes the main character, based on me,
mm-hmm.
in his 20s, and it's so there won't be any sexual abuse in there per se, at least not my character, but we'll probably try to find some way to steam it up a bit. It's a, you know, the title of it's going to be San Antonio Rose. So I meet a young lady named Rose. All I can tell you about that is that when I went to college in San Antonio, they have lovely warm monsoon rains in the winter time or early spring. With a nice young lady by your side, and in the right stand of trees, can just be enormously
magical.
Fun.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Good. Good.
And the other one is a follow-up to Dollar Lake, and it's going to deal with the subject of the Bohemian Grove.
Oh, good for you. Very interesting. That's a subject that fascinates me a great deal.
Yeah, well, it's you know, going back to sexual abuse stories of kids from the Franklin Federal Credit Union collapse, this Lawrence King was flying kids all over the country, even into the White House, for late-night sex parties with top government officials. That's a matter of record. And these kids were also flown to other locations, including the Bohemian Grove out in California.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, good for you. Best of luck. This is a difficult topic in a sense, but it's one that needs to be addressed, and I think you've entreated it with poise, with character, with taste, and with candor. It's certainly not light reading, but it is important reading. I didn't give you time to answer the question before. What age groups do you think these books are appropriate for?
Well, I think they're okay for about 16 years on up. Yes, they're a bit heavily graphic, but I mean the protagonists themselves are 13 and 14. I was once doing a book signing in a Barnes and Noble, and a mother came by and saw the picture of the kids on the front covers of The Culvert and Boarding School, and figured, oh, these are kids' stories, and began to guide her under 10-year-old children to my books. And I immediately stopped her, and I said, actually, these are more on an adult subject, older than your kids. Yeah. And she said, oh, all right, well, thank you. And immediately hustled her brood off to some other part of the bookstore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think
a certain level of maturity is called for.
Well, I think so.
Yeah.
You know.
Clint Adams, author of The Culvert, Boarding School, and Dollar Lake, three very riveting books that deal with one of America's best kept dirty secrets that has legs in our government, legs in the church, legs in the business community and commerce, and legs even right here in the last Green Valley. And you can learn all about them at Clint's website, clintadams.net, or Google Clint Adams and the title of one of the books, Boarding School, Dollar Lake, or The Culvert. You have been extremely generous with your time. We've gone a little longer than we planned to, Clint, and thank you so much. Is there anything you want to say as we close out the program?
Not really, other than I'm always available to anybody who has some questions about the stories as they read them or once they've finished, through the website. And I enjoy having conversations with readers. You know, there's the odd one that'll come and say, this is horrible, why, how could you write something like this? Mm-hmm. I don't believe this happened or anything like that. And then the next email will be from somebody who will say, gosh, the very same thing happened to me. Let me tell you my story.
Yeah. You're doing a great service to people, changing their lives, because people do need to know that they're not the only ones. And I think a lot of people to whom this has happened, people who've been victimized by this sort of thing, by sexual abuse and predatorial behavior, think that they're alone, that they're different. And it is much more common, or has been down through the years, than we would care to admit. And
or they think there's something wrong with them. And the act of sexual abuse says nothing about the victim, really. What it speaks volumes about is the perpetrator, the person actually committing the crime.
Clint Adams' website, clintadams.net, and I want to thank you very much for being my guest here on Sunday Special for Heritage Information Radio. I'm Kevin Harkins.